wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, can you believe it? We are in officially the Christmas season. It is crazy. I don't know what it is about this year, but this year it came on me faster than any year that I remember. We're going to start the glory of Christmas at the end of this week. This is a crazy thing that we're there, and we're starting a new series this weekend called 'Tis the Season. And I have to tell you, as I think about Christmas, I actually think about how much I missed of the true meaning of Christmas when I was younger. I mean, we celebrated it, but I really missed the whole point. In fact, as I really contemplate Christmas as it's celebrated around the world, I've realized that a multitude of people celebrate Christmas. I mean, there are billions around the world that celebrate this holiday, but very few who genuinely understand and experience the impact of it. And that's just sad to celebrate something that you don't experience. There's not much more emptiness than that. Growing up, I was one of the many. I loved Christmas. In fact, I have to tell you, Christmas was my favorite holiday, but for all the wrong reasons. Yeah, I loved the lights and the trees, and I loved the time off and all that stuff. But what I really loved about Christmas as a young person were the gifts. In fact, I loved Christmas. It was my favorite holiday because I got more gifts given to me than on any other day of the year. I mean, it was funny. Jesus' birth got me more gifts than my own birth. I mean, that's kind of how Christmas was, my favorite holiday. But I'm telling you, though I celebrated big time as a young person, raised in the Christian religion, I had no clue about the true gift of Christmas. What it was. I had certainly never unwrapped the power of it, the hope of it, the impact of it into my life. And so the goal of this series, 'Tis the Season, is to help all of us move from the many who celebrate to the few who genuinely experience. The goal of this series is to help us to genuinely understand and then experience God's gift of Christmas in our lives. Before we get started, would you pray with me? Father, thank you for this moment in time that we can let everything else go, all the crazy of life, the burdens, the excitement, the to-dos, and we can just focus on something that's essentially important in our lives. And I pray as we do that you'd speak to us, that you'd move us, that you'd mark us in positive ways, and we'll thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen. This weekend, we begin the conversation in this series at the foundational level. I mean, I just feel like we have to go right, scrape all of the surface stuff off and go to the foundation. Christmas, 'tis the season for love. I mean, that's the foundational level. That's the essential foundation of everything we can have in Jesus. We human beings have a lot of needs. I mean, a ton of needs, obviously. But if given just one guess as to our greatest need, you know, the need that tends to dominate our thoughts the most, the need that tends to drive our pursuits more than any other, the answer would have to be love. I mean, it's foundational. It's at the center of everything in the human experience. It's at the center of our music, our art, our literature. It's at the center of our deepest longings. And yet, with all of our focus on love, finding it remains one of the most elusive quests in the human journey. I mean, it's just unbelievable how hard it is. We're all desperate for it, but very few of us actually find it and experience it in life, which brings us to the reason for Christmas. God was providing what we need the most. In fact, here's the universal reality of Christmas. Love is the reason Jesus came on that first Christmas. Everything at the core of what Christmas is about comes back to love. We celebrate it about trees. It's about love. Light, it's about love. It's about gift. It's about love. It's everything to do with Christmas is love. Look at how God says it in 1 John 4:9 and 10. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world. That's Christmas. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. So love is the entire reason we have the Christmas celebration in the first place. And yet think about how many people celebrate Christmas, but how few people really experience the profound impact of genuine love. How few people actually give it. And so it brings me to the truth. All right, why was it so important for God to send his Son to earth and to show his love in this way? Why is love at the foundation of our human need? And here's the truth that will kind of engage us for the whole conversation this weekend. Life is nothing without love, which is why God sent it on that Christmas. He wants us to have life. He wants us to experience it in fullness and significance. But life is nothing if we don't. Life is nothing without love. I'm not going too far to say life becomes worthless without love. Empty, lonely without love. Of no benefit at all without love. Without love, life is nothing. And this isn't me creating theology for you. This is what God said. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13, starting with verse 1. If I speak in the tongues, the languages of men, or even of angels, but do not have love, I'm just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give my body to hardship that I may boast, I mean, I go all in but have not love, I gain nothing. Life is nothing without love. In fact, no matter what we do, success or failure, life is meaningless without it. And it's easy to see. All you have to do is look around. All you have to do is look at your own narratives, your own experiences. But I'll use my grandkids just for a minute, okay? My grandkids are at the age where they're starting to do these activities. Like my grandsons are playing basketball, as an example. My granddaughters are doing dance. And it's an amazing and profound reality that when anything happens, when they're dancing or playing basketball, when anything happens, good or bad, they immediately look over at those of us who love them. If I'm standing in the stand of a basketball game, it's like they'll be dribbling and they'll stop and they'll look, you know? They'll be taking a shot and look before they shoot. And, you know, they want to look. Why? Because that's what gives them significance in what they're doing. If they did the greatest dance or the greatest basketball performance in the history of this planet, but looked over and no one saw them, no one cared, no one loved them, it would be meaningless and empty because we human beings desperately need love. We need someone to see us. We need someone to love us. We need someone to believe we're significant no matter what we're doing. Life is nothing without love. And here's the reason. I have to just remind you, this is not something that I've created to talk to you about for you. This is something that I'm striving to engage for my own needs and understand from God's truth and then share it with you. This is my journey. And for me to understand why life is nothing without love, when there's so many cool elements of life and yet it's still so empty without love, I have to kind of go back to the beginning, and here's the reality. Here's the reason. God created us for love. And since God created us for love, all of life was designed and created for love. Doesn't matter what we experience in life, if we don't experience love in the center of it, we experience nothing. First, we're supposed to experience his love. And then we're supposed to experience love with others. We are created and designed to be relational beings. So life is incomplete without a love-based relationship. Life is empty, impossible without love. In fact, love is the defining need of our lives. I like to say it this way. It's the fuel. It's the gold standard for our lives. And this is why when Jesus was asked what the greatest command that was ever given is, he didn't even have to blink first. It was so easy to get at. Look what he said in Matthew 22, starting verse 37. What's the greatest command? I'll tell you, Jesus replied. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And he couldn't stop there. He said, and the second is its partner. The second is its immediate consequence. Love your neighbor as yourself. So when they said, what's the greatest command? I mean, the Bible's a big book, you know, all the words of God from Genesis to the Revelation. What's the most important word? And what did Jesus say? Love. It was easy. And he says, by the way, love God. And if you really experience the love of God, love for others, that's when life becomes something. And I love the last sentence he gives us there. Because he really makes it clear, all the law and all the prophets, everything God has ever said, everything God has ever inspired to be written, hang on these two commandments. God created us for love, so life is nothing when we don't have it. And here's the reality that I want you to see. It's so important for me to understand this in my own engagement of this issue. Our lives will never be full. Our lives will never be complete without it. I mean, you can have everything the world affords, but if you don't have someone who sees you, not the make-believe you, the real you, sees you and loves you, you'll never be complete. Never. 1 John chapter 4, God says this in verse 7, dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. If we have a connection with him, a relationship with him, it's love he's pouring into us. And everyone who then loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. I mean, full and complete living comes only when we experience love at the center of our lives. And did you notice what the passage said? It says, love literally only comes when we experience it from God. That's where it comes from. And that brings me to my problem, because I talk about the things of God a lot. I read the Bible a lot. I mean, it's really the basis of most of my thinking and most of my life. And yet, I'm just telling you, so often I am so far away from love, from experiencing the fullness of his love, so I'm trying to find it in other things, and from pouring out his love to others, I'm very often not doing that. And it's like, why? What's standing in the way? And here's what I found the problem is. The problem is that by nature, none of us, me at the center of that none of us fully know or experience God's love on our own. None of us. We can know everything there is to know about God. We can celebrate Christmas with a vengeance. We can give. We can come to church 2 billion times a week. We can do all this stuff and yet never truly know his love, because we can't do it on our own. Romans 3, verse 10 says, as it's written, there is no one righteous. That means there's no one who does right on their own. There's no one who follows the right path on their own. And I know humanity a little bit, but God knows humanity far more than I do. And so he knows how we think. He knows how our mind works. And he goes, there's no one righteous. And most of us look around and go, I don't know. I'm pretty close. And so he throws in these next words, not even you. And for me to get it, he's saying, you know, no one's righteous. I start thinking, oh, no, I'm pretty good. Not even you. And for me to really get it, he has to throw in this word, punk, you know. Not even you, punk. Not one of us is living up to the standard of God, righteous. And then he goes further. There's no one who understands. There's no one who on their own by nature seeks God. All have turned away. They've together become worthless. Because you see, when you turn away from God, you're turning away from the only source for love. And when you have no love, what does life become? Worthless. He said everybody's become worthless. And there's no one who does good, not even one. So the reason we're missing so much in our relationships, the reason we're messing up so much in our expressions of love and experiences of love is because we're not experiencing God fully. And for me, I think in metaphors, and so I had to think, what does it look like? And I came up with the concept of the dam, you know, Hoover Dam and those kind of dams. And if you think about what a dam is, there's a ever-flowing source of water, and they create a dam that blocks that source so that they can do different things with the land down from that source, and they can use it for making electricity and stuff, but they're blocking the source. They're blocking the water, and that's exactly what our nature does with God. God is a never-ending flow of love towards us, and we, by nature, dam him off. We block him in our lives, and it just kills us. So we're not able to experience the fullness of love with him, the fullness of love with others, because we're blocking it. And this is why there's always something missing, even in the best of our relationships. Which brings me to understand the results. So remember what we started with. Christmas is all about Jesus bringing us love, solving the great human problem. And yet, man, we block that love off. And so the result is, we seek to find love and fulfillment through cheap replacements. I mean, we desperately need love. We desperately need to be seen. We desperately need to know that people accept us and find meaning. But when we block God's love, which is the only thing that can fill us from the inside out, we have to find cheap replacements that pretend to do it. And that's exactly what we do. This is why I loved Christmas so much when I was growing up. Of course I loved Christmas a lot, because I got stuff. And stuff is one of the big cheap replacements that we put in place of God. If I could just have that, oh, I'd never need anything again until I got it, and then I'm going to need something else again. Christmas, I'll never forget. I wanted more than anything on the planet a motorcycle. And my mom had told me growing up, I mean, look, she was the mother of four boys. She's got to get used to crazy people. But she said, you'll never have a motorcycle. You'll never have a motorcycle, which made me want the motorcycle all the more. You know, parenting 101. You'll never have a motorcycle. Oh, yes, I will, woman. You know, it's like I wanted a motorcycle really bad. The cool thing is, my mom was balanced by my dad. And so one Christmas, I came up the stairs of our home, and there under the tree was a ruby red Yamaha motorcycle. Under the tree. Oh my gosh. Here was what I thought before Christmas. If I could have a motorcycle, I'd never need anything else in life. 5 minutes after I got that motorcycle, my brothers and I were fighting. We were causing, you know, bedlam in the world. It was terrible, and I was wanting something else, because this is how life is. And we do it as adults. Look at what 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17 says. Don't love the world. He's not saying don't love green grass and the sunshine. He made that to be beautiful. But he's saying don't love the world, its temporary nature, and the things of this world. It doesn't replace God. He says, don't love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away. But whoever does the will of God lives forever. So it's been about 50 years since I got that beautiful ruby red Yamaha for Christmas, that thing that was going to solve all my problems and make my joy complete forever. My parents have a place, both of them are gone now, but bought a place up in Cadillac, Michigan years ago, still there. It's now kind of part of our family. And in the garage of that place is that Yamaha motorcycle, 50 years old, piece of junk sitting against a wall hasn't been ridden for years. That's exactly what happens to every single cheap replacement of God's love in this world. It promises everything and it delivers nothing. And many of us are giving up everything to chase nothing. Many of us are using the cheap replacement of relationships. We play relationship roulette, you know? Jump from one relationship to another relationship, hoping that somehow we'll finally land on the magic number. Some use alcohol, some use drugs, some use the pursuits of pleasure. Some try to find fulfillment in career or money. Some use religion. All of us try and fill our lives with stuff, but none of it works. They're all temporary. They ultimately don't have the capacity to do what only God's love can do. They just lead us to the vicious cycle of disappointment. And can I tell you what's sad? Many of us who celebrate Christmas still live in the vicious cycle of disappointment because we're not experiencing what Jesus came to give us. God's forever, eternal, satisfying love, which leads me to the simple solution. What are we going to do about this problem we have for love? What are we going to do about the brokenness that comes with us trying to replace his love with all these cheap substitutes? What's the solution? Christmas is the solution. We need to experience God's love for real. 1 John 4:19 says it. We love because he first loved us. What he's saying is once you experience the fullness of what Jesus brought on that first Christmas, once you experience the fullness of his love, which is ultimately and eternally satisfying, then you can fulfill the single most important thing on this planet, the thing that gives you life, love. Loving God, loving others. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty good at saying, I think I'm doing that. I, when it comes to really important stuff, someone says, hey, are you doing this? Or I ask myself, am I doing this? I'm pretty good about going, if I'm not totally doing it, I'm really close. Can any of you relate to this? Now, if I'm evaluating you, oh my gosh, you're so far away, it's like you'll never get there. But if I'm evaluating me, I give myself the nod. I'm kind of like, dude, really close. Because it's easy to say that. So I have to, for my own good, if I'm going to be honest and really experience God's love, if I'm really going to find fulfillment, I can't just answer, yeah, I'm doing that. I have to look for the clear signs of it, the outcomes. And I want to share with you what they are for me, and maybe it'll impact you too. If I'm really experiencing God's love, do you know what it does? It transforms my entire life from the wrong kind of life to the right kind of life, from the wrong behavioral patterns to the right behavioral patterns, from the wrong focuses to the right focuses in life. When I'm truly experiencing God's love, it transforms me from the inside out. I just thought this would be good to kind of share a story about it from the Bible. And imagine that, sharing a story from the Bible here at church. I don't know. Hopefully it works for you, but in Luke chapter 7, Jesus was visiting a Pharisee's house. The guy's name was Simon. And a Pharisee's like a really knowledgeable guy when it came to the scriptures and teaching and all of that. And very, very religious, but not necessarily experiencing God's love. This guy wasn't. And a woman came into that setting where Jesus was in the Pharisee's house and poured her love out on Jesus. You can read Luke 7 on your own, but I mean, poured her love out, a very expensive jar of perfume all over his feet. I mean, she was weeping and crying and wiping his feet with her hair and kissing his feet. I mean, just pouring out her love with no shame at all on Jesus. It was crazy. Simon the Pharisee had snubbed Jesus, wasn't even a good host, didn't do anything a good host was supposed to do. And all the while, he's looking at this woman and saying, I can't believe he's letting her do this. I can't believe he's even letting her touch him. I can't believe, and she just total judgment of this woman. So Jesus told a story. He said, hey, Mr. Pharisee man, Simon, there was this moneylender who lent two people money. One of them had borrowed so much it was unpayable in a lifetime. The other one had, you know, borrowed a little bit. It was pretty manageable, could have been paid back. But the money lender forgave them both. He says, which one of those people forgiven of debt do you think would love the money lender the most? And he says, probably the one who had the unpayable debt. And then look at what Jesus says, starting in verse 44 of Luke 7. Then he turned toward the woman whom Simon had been judging and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house and you didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, common courtesy, custom in that culture. But this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she's poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as great her great love is shown. He's saying it's obvious. How much does she love? Because of how much she's experienced my love. But then he says, but whoever has been forgiven little loves little. By the way, that was a nice way to say, Simon, the reason you're such a crockety old jerk is because you've never experienced any forgiveness because you think you don't need it. And I'm telling you, billions of people celebrate Christmas. And they're more like Simon than the woman. Right? They've never really experienced it. Oh yeah, there might have been a couple things in my life I needed to be forgiveness for, but man, not like anyone else. Which goes back to the problem. Not one of us is righteous, not even one. Not one of us is good, not even one. Not one of us can experience God's love on our own, not even one. All of us have fallen short, every single one. It's only the people like this woman who understand how they deserve nothing from God and then experience it, who then pour out love to others because they know the gift he came to give them. Jesus' love transformed her from a sinful woman to a woman of overflowing love, and he can do the same for us. Have you experienced it? So I have to say, you know, it's easy for me to say, oh yeah, I'm experiencing God's love. But the real question is my life showing any signs at all of being transformed like this? Is yours? What good is it to celebrate the holiday and not experience the love he came to bring? What good is it to celebrate that he came to change us and not be experiencing the change that his love brings? I mean, we need to experience it. If we're experiencing his love, it doesn't just transform us into the right kind of people. It positively motivates us to live the right kind of lives. I mean, it changes our motivations. Look at Paul the Apostle wrote, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14, for Christ's love compels us. It's my underlying foundational motivation, Jesus' love for me. Because we're convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. Our sins can be forever gone. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. He goes, his love for me has now become the only motivation for which I live. When he was in prison, he was motivated by God's love. When he was preaching, he was motivated by God's love. When he was dealing with people individually, he was motivated by God's love. When he was writing the scriptures that we now have, he was motivated by love. All because Jesus' love changed his motivation. Motivations. Question, what motivates you? I don't know about you, but all my bad behavior is motivated by bad motives. But when I experience his love, it changes my motivations. So I guess this is where it comes down to the application for me. If it's all about, do I really want to experience genuine fulfillment, or do I want to keep playing games and filling my life with cheap substitutes? And this is what I want to challenge you. I love it that you come to North Ridge. Trust me. I mean, I stand in my office and I watch your cars come in, and I cherish that you come into North Ridge, but I'm haunted by the idea of you coming into North Ridge and celebrating something you're not experiencing. I mean, I long for you to experience the reality of what Jesus came to give you. I long for it for you. If you want to genuinely experience fulfillment, and I, I know everybody's at a different state of attention to this talk and this conversation, but I just need to remind you, every single one of us, with every breath we take, are looking for genuine fulfillment. Every choice you make is about chasing fulfillment. Every relationship you pursue is about chasing fulfillment. Every career dream you have is about chasing fulfillment. Every one of us, no matter how much we have or how little, it's all about seeking fulfillment. And if we want to genuinely experience fulfillment in our lives, then we have to start by receiving God's love, because it's the only thing that can bring it. And just so you know, this isn't something that you have to chase or you can earn. This is something that Jesus came to give you on that first Christmas. He came to give it to you. It's the gift of Christmas, not the motorcycle I long for and not whatever you're longing for. That's not the gift. The gift of Christmas is the love of Jesus, and you can have it. All you have to do is receive it. I mean, look at John 1:12. To all, not some, but to all who did receive him, opened their lives to Jesus. To those who, and it's kind of explaining what it means to receive him, to those who believed in his name. In his name means in all he was and all he represents. To those who put their faith in his perfect life, his death for our sin, and his resurrection to new life, when you put your faith in him, when you receive him, God the Father gives you the right to become children of God. In other words, every day of my life in Jesus, when something happens, good or bad, like my grandkids do on the dance platform or on the court, I get to turn and look to the Father and know that he sees me and he loves me and he makes my life matter, because that's the gift of Christmas. That's what Jesus came to give us. I grew up in the Christian religion. I had said all the right words, but I had never genuinely received God's love. And I just believe there are many like that who celebrate Christmas these days. And so I want to tell you my story. I missed experiencing God's love by 12 inches. I mean, I know the distance. Because I missed experiencing God's love, the distance from my head to my heart. I knew the words, I knew the languages, I knew the stories, I knew it all. But I had never experienced it, because I'd never received his love by giving him my heart. Have you? I believe the way more of us here gathered as a Northridge family right now are missing God's love than would admit it. And I'm not asking you to admit it to me. You don't owe me anything. And I'm not asking you to admit it to each other. You don't owe each other anything. But if you don't admit it to yourself, you'll never experience what Jesus came to give you. You'll never experience what you're longing for with every breath you take. You'll never experience the fullness of God. And so before I give you the last thought, and before I kind of bring this Thanksgiving weekend talk to a close, would you just bow with me in a word of prayer? And as we bow in prayer, I just really want to encourage you. If you're here and you're saying, I don't think I've ever experienced the fullness of his love in my life. I think it's in my head and it's never gone to my heart. This is your moment. I'm going to pray. And my words, my prayer can't do it for you. But if you take the words of my prayer and make it the expression of your heart to God, he can change you. Not out loud, in your heart, just say, Jesus, right now, with all the faith I have, I'm receiving you. I'm putting my trust not in myself, not in the things I've wanted, not in the things I thought would make me fulfilled, but I'm putting my trust in you. I've sinned against you. I'm guilty. I've made such bad choices. I'm asking you to forgive me by your death on the cross and give me new life based upon your resurrection. And I'm giving you my heart by faith in this moment, in Jesus' name, amen. Now, just before I give you the final thought and conclude the conversation for this weekend, if you prayed with me, let us know. There's so many things we can do to support you. We want to give you a Bible if you want it. If you don't want it, you can tell us that. Or we want to give you next steps that might be relevant to you, but you have to tell us where you're at. And so all you have to do, if you just prayed with me, send us a text Send it to the number 313131, and the message you send is Northridge, one word. And we'll send you a link, and it asks you, do you want a Bible? No, I don't, or yes, I do. What's your next step? Blah, blah, blah. And we'll do that. It takes you about a minute to fill out. Send the link back, and we'll help you move forward. If we're going to genuinely experience fulfillment in our lives, I mean genuine fulfillment, then once we receive God's love, the reality is we can't hoard it. We can't dam it up in us. We have to share God's love. If we're receiving God's love and not sharing it, we become the very block to experiencing God's continual flow of love. You have to share God's love. Look at 1 John chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and love is made complete in us. But if we don't love one another, the opposite is true. God is not living in us, and his love is not being made complete in us. It has to flow through. We have to share God's love. The sinful woman in Luke 7 is a great example of this. God had so transformed her life that she wanted to share it with him. Remember, love God, love others. She poured her love out on him, and she was exemplifying her love for him to everybody else. I mean, she couldn't help but share it. The truth is, the best way to share his love is first by how you live, transformed living and transformed motives, not by your words. In fact, do you know why much of the world rejects the concept of God's love and God's truth and God's promises? Do you know why? It's because the people talking about it to them aren't living it themselves. They talk about God's love, but they don't live his love. They talk about God's forgiveness, but they don't live his forgiveness. They talk about God's peace, but they have no peace. I mean, who wants that? No one. But when you're really experiencing God's love and it's living out, people then want to know why, and they'll ask. And you know what you do? You just tell them why. A lot of people go, I can't tell anybody about Jesus. I don't know the Bible from beginning to end. Either do I. You don't have to know all the truths and all the beliefs. All God wants you to do is tell the story. Hey, you look at it, here's, you want to know what's different about me? I'll tell you what's different about me. I was a mess. I was broken. I was flawed. And I was a failure after failure after a failure. And then I experienced what Jesus came to give us that first Christmas, his love. And he has changed my life. Well, tell me about all the deep truths of that. He has changed my life. What are they going to say? No, he didn't. Your story needs to be shared. And one of the great ways we can do it is by sharing a place like this. Earlier in the announcements, we told you about Christmas Eve. We're not going to have our regular weekend services on December 21 and 22 because we're going to do Easter Eve services all day long here and at our other campuses. I mean, we're going all out to make Christmas Eve great. Why? I'm going to tell you why. Because more people will say yes to an invitation to hear the truth of Jesus on Christmas Eve than almost any other day of the year. So we're willing to say, all right, we won't do Saturday and Sunday when they won't come. We'll do Christmas Eve when they can, and we'll do it great. And all of our volunteers will be in, and all of our creativity will be poured out. It is going to be a great Christmas Eve, but you know what? It will be a lousy Christmas Eve, no matter how well we do, if this place isn't filled every service. And all that takes is you sharing the story. In your programs, we actually put these really easy invitations that you can tear off. They're perforated. It's been ripping in my pocket. And you can give it to every single person you meet over the next couple of weeks and invite them in. Now, make sure if you're not living God's love, you don't tell them you come to Northridge. There are other churches you should tell them you go to. But I mean, if you're living it out, invite them to experience the why of your story. And on Christmas Eve, we'll share the hope together. So here's how you can get more of these, by the way, at guest services, and I hope you'll just give out hundreds. But here's the way I want to conclude this talk. All the great musical artists, all the way down through the quarters of time, have always had it right. At the center of all music is love. In fact, I'm going to disappoint some of you who think I should be more spiritual than this, but I'm not more spiritual than this. Even the Beatles had it right. I mean, I'm telling you, they had it right. Love is all we need. All we need is, yeah, da na 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 na. I mean, the Beatles had it right. The Beatles, of all people. Good night. They were from England and they had it right. The Beatles had it right. All we need is love. What they had wrong was how to get it and where it comes from. It comes from God. And we get it by walking with Him. And when we do, His love changes how we live and how we love. And my prayer is that God's love has and will continue to change all of us for the rest of our lives, because Christmas, 'tis the season for love. I'm so glad you were here. We'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.